Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory The Ranch Club, and Promontory Foundation, and Carl Malone Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.
8:14 now. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Commission yesterday, or Council, I should say, made appointments to both of its planning commissions last night. On the phone, I have Summit County Council Member Claudia McMullen. Good morning, Claudia.
Morning, Leslie.
So the council reappointed Commissioner B. Peck to the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission along with Julia Reynolds Collins. What can you tell us about Ms. Collins?
Okay, so Ms. Collins is an urban planner, and she lives up, obviously, in the Snyderville Basin. She has 8 years' experience of regional and local planning in the state of Utah, and importantly and interestingly for us, she also is a transportation planner. So we were just really lucky last night, yesterday, in that we got some amazing candidates for both commissions that had skill sets that we were particularly looking for. And anytime you can get somebody with planning experience and transportation experience, given our, you know, given the issues that we deal with in the basin, you scoop them up.
I was going to say, I know they receive a small stipend, but, I mean, should she be paid?
Well, she should be paid her small stipend for now.
Okay. Now, on the east side, you reappointed incumbent Tanya Hansen, but then turned down another incumbent to appoint Rich Sontag, who's project manager there at Promontory. Why do you think Rich is going to make a good planning commissioner?
Well, Rich is the other example. We had Julia on the west side, and on the east side, we had this opportunity with Rich Sontag, who has such a depth and breadth of experience in planning, in codes, general plans, applying them, being the applicant, all sides of, you know, of the aisle, you know, being the applicant and also developer at time and also dealing with our staff and being an attorney and having 17 years experience in the East Side and being very up to date on what's been happening with the East Side Planning Commission. We just couldn't do better than Rich Sontag.
Yeah, so you don't see any conflicts of interest there, huh?
I don't. You know, I've been in the position as a planning commission where I've had to recuse, and that's all you do. You know, Promontory is vested. The agreements are in place. They're down to basically administrative decisions. And in any event, excuse me, if there's a decision involving Promontory, Rich would just have to recuse himself.
Yeah, but there's still lots of development around Promontory. And when you start thinking of things like Silver Creek Village and such, and, you know, the whole entryway into Promontory, I mean, that, does he recuse himself from decisions like that?
Well, that's the Snyderville Basin. That's on the basin side. So he would... my suspicion is if he was involved at all, it would be as a member of the public going to those hearings, having some, you know, giving public input on that.
Got it. Okay. As some council members noted, though, there is a perception that Rich is kind of the guy from the west side.
Yep. Yep. You know, we decided unanimously that whatever perceived warts, they're way outweighed by the benefits here of the breadth and depth of experience in the exact areas where that we need in the east side.
So what's still left to do there on the east side?
Oh, geez. Well, we still haven't gotten apparently what's going to happen next. They've been working on the development code and the revision to the development code and the zoning map. So what happened was that we have passed the general plan, the amended general plan, and now we're working on the key, right? The key document is the development code and the zoning map. Those are the critical documents because there's the documents that actually create, you know, the plan creates the vision and the development code and the zoning maps are the mechanism, the instrument to achieving the vision. And they've been working diligently for at least 3 years, the East Side Planning Commission has, on these very documents. So the next thing we're supposed to see, what I'm understanding is we're going to see, is a zoning map. Now, that's just one piece. And then the council will review that, have its comments. We don't know what we're going to do because we haven't seen it. We may send it back to the commission. We may act on it. We may not. because then we have the development code amendments that need to come forth, and then we do the same process. So we're right smack in the middle of very important and intense process on the east side.
Yeah, that zoning map we've heard, I mean, could allow an additional 2,000 units there in the Camas Valley alone. Is that some concern to you?
Sure. It's a concern that's going to be vetted thoroughly at the council level when it gets up to us.
But we've seen some amazing turnout from the public.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got some buy-in.
We're probably going to see the same at the council level.
Okay. And when does it get before you?
Don't know. Our hope is that it comes to us sooner than later. And I've heard some rumblings that it could even happen, you know, within a month. So we'll just wait and see.
All right. The other major discussion yesterday was transit. You volunteered to be on a subcommittee that's going to prioritize projects and what, basically look how to pay for them?
Yes. Yeah, so we've had three meetings of lots of information presented to us, you know, revenue, mechanisms, raising revenue mechanisms, needs assessment, projects, specific projects. Now what are we going to do? Well, we want to take the information, the subcommittee particularly, is going to take all the information, and we're going to try to come up with scenarios and funding mechanisms, right? So here are the projects. What can we do now? What can we do in the in the short term? And then how are we going to pay for them? So we're going to sit down, we're going to try to prioritize the projects, and then we're going to try to figure out how to pay for them. And it's going to be a mixed bag, right? We're going to have different options. We're just going to brainstorm how do we get accomplished the most for the amount of money that we are comfortable raising through whatever that mechanism is, be it taxes, be it bonding, be it, you know, moving money from other areas of the county, other areas, and putting it into transportation. There are options. There's a pot we can come up with. How are we going to do it, and what are we going to do with the pot? And this is the exciting time. That's why I agreed to be on the subcommittee, because it's fun.
Yeah. So will you be prioritizing projects based on need as opposed to cost?
Probably based on, I would guess, my suspicion is that's the low-hanging fruit, right? The lowest cost and the highest need. You try to match those two and get those accomplished. Because you probably wouldn't want to, I mean, I'm just guessing because we haven't met yet, but you probably wouldn't want to put all your eggs in one basket of a big, large capital improvement project, which will take years and lots of money, and then you're not accomplishing anything.
Yeah.
Until that point.
Public Works Director Derek Radke said that if you wanted to fund everything on the wish list, you're way short of having the money to do it. So how much are we talking about?
Oh, it's millions. It's crazy millions. We are so way short. That is virtually pie-in-the-sky wish list numbers because they're that big. So we just have to get real and figure out what we could do for the amount of money we can raise comfortably, the amount of money that we're comfortable, we have the appetite to raise in whatever the mechanism is. But, you know, $500 million, that assumes so many things that are so far down the road that it's not even worth really spending too much time talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I heard numbers of approaching $100 million, $38 million just for the short-term projects, another $59 million for the long-term stuff.
No, it's big. It's huge. But, you know, there are ways to raise money. And it's going to we're going to be testing, probably not me, but the future county councils are going to be testing the community's appetite to tax itself potentially to solve the community's problems with respect to transit and transportation, just like we've done for open space. You know, we did a killer job, raised over $100 million for open space and trails. That was a community priority. And what we're hearing is it's a community priority to fix our transportation and transit issues. So we'll have to test that theory.
Yeah.
And that is a route to raising lots of money, particularly through bonding, for example.
Right. And I love the quote, if you're sitting in traffic, you're the reason for it.
Exactly. Yeah. This is not an issue that's been created by our visitors. The visitors contribute at certain times, but this is a community issue.
Well, let's talk about some of the specific ideas. You and others seem to be interested in e-bikes. How does this work? Our trails aren't big enough for all of the people on them, plus bikes too, are they?
Yeah. E-bikes is an issue I'm not entirely familiar with. I've never even ridden an e-bike. And I also know there's issues involving how to classify it. Is it more like a motorcycle or more like a bicycle? And if it's more like a motorized vehicle, it's not allowed on anything but paved trails, first of all. And secondly, they have to be of a certain width. And thirdly, they're not allowed at all on some paved trails, depending on what conservation easement terms may be. So what e-bikes would look like, I don't know, but I'm willing to look at it.
All right. Let's see. The Hyperloop, I think you had even a discussion about that. Do you agree with Roger Armstrong that it's worth looking at, even if it is kind of out there?
Sure. I say look at everything. Get educated about everything. If it ever exists, it's so far down the road, I probably won't even be alive. But it's certainly fun to look into, and it's certainly interesting to learn about. So sure, I'll go to the meeting and learn about what a Hyperloop is and what Elon Musk's up to.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing is just getting the easements for it, no?
Well, that's going to be big. Right-of-ways, easements, sure. There's lots of challenges. Believe me, there's no dearth of challenges here. But there's also no dearth of need. So we have to figure out a way to meet the challenge.
Well, and that's
as best we can.
That's what we're hearing, though. It's just like, stop doing all the studies and stop talking with and writing plans and do something.
That's how, I mean, we all feel that way. We're very anxious on the county council to do things. But that I don't want to suggest that we haven't been doing things. We've been doing lots of things. Our transportation director the community has been doing lots of things. Park City and Summit County have been doing lots of things. We've expanded bus service. We've expanded frequency and hours on very popular lines. It's increased ridership tremendously. I mean, there are things that are being done. We're looking at HOV. We do HOV during Sundance. You know, there are things that are being done, and there are more things to be done, and we're all anxious to keep moving in this good direction.
Yeah, the staff report mentioned some of the reasons people have for not riding the bus. It takes too long, the bus stops too far away, and it's not cool. How do you tackle those attitudes?
Yeah, from what I hear, the issues are connectivity, convenience, capacity, and whether it's cool. Well, we've tackled some, and we're going to continue to tackle the connectivity and the convenience by expanding the bus service times, and hopefully we're going to expand the bus service routes to make it more convenient so people don't have to walk as far. We have ideas on internal neighborhood connector type buses to then meet up with other buses. There are ways to do this. Now, as far as cool, I don't know how to make a bus cool. You have Wi-Fi on it, probably. You make the experience of waiting for a bus not unpleasant when you're standing out in, wind-blown snow. You make it comfortable. You have art. I don't know. There's things you can do. People do it because lots of communities take buses.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something I also hear is just the access to the bus stop where people have to climb over snow berms, you know, to stand outside in blowing snow. So,
yeah. Well, we have, like I said, we have no dearth of issues and no dearth of challenges, but we take them one at a time. You look at we created the bus stop. We heard from people, you're building a Hyatt Place right on 224. How do you expect those people to get to a resort? They're staying in a hotel. They're going to have skis, they're going to have equipment, and they're going to have to walk down a highway? No. So we built a bus stop, a nice bus stop that's kept clean of snow. They still have to walk a little bit, but it's at least right there. And all we can do is keep bus stops as clean of snow and covered and comfortable as possible.
Finally, it sounds like you had some good news from Mountain Accord regarding the controlling agency on the I-80 corridor study?
Yeah. Let's see. Now, the Mountain Accord has short-term emphasis. I'm just reading from my notes. Short-term emphasis on 224 and 248 study and at a higher level on I-80. And Summit County is to lead the study. It's supposed to work concurrently with our long-range transportation plan. So things are moving and people are focusing, which is really good news for us and from my perspective. We even have the attention of the Mountain Accord on our problems, on our 224 and 248 and I-80 problems. So there's nothing bad about that.
All right. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Thanks, Claudia.
Thanks, Leslie. Bye.
Summit County Council Member Claudia McMullen. Well, after 4 years of drought, it has finally rained and snowed this winter, but is it enough to pull Utah out of the drought? On the phone with some idea of that is Randy Julander. He's a snow survey supervisor with the National Natural Resources Conservation Service.
Good morning. It's a beautiful morning.
Well, we've got some rain, hopefully turning to snow here, but after 4 years of drought, I mean, we've finally seen some rain and snow this winter, but is it enough to pull the state out of drought?
That's a very good question. And the best you can come up with from a scientific perspective is it depends. And the bottom line is southern Utah doing exceptionally well. We have above normal soil moisture. We have above normal snowpack. And the only thing that is a negative down there is the fact that reservoir storage is really low. Northern Utah, snowpacks are a little closer to average. Soils are a bit drier. We don't expect nearly as much runoff. And the flip side is reservoir storage tends to be a little bit better in the north than it does in the south. We will have more than adequate water supplies this year simply because of the combination of reservoir storage and expected runoff. But the impacts of drought can linger in various ways and applications a little bit longer. Although we're going in the right direction, and given that, we would expect conditions to continue to improve throughout the remainder of the snow accumulation season.
Yeah. So when we see the numbers, 88%, 90%, we're talking of normal, so 100% is normal?
That is correct. We consider anything between 90 and 110 to be a normal condition. So we're right on that bottom end of normal, and hopefully this storm brings us back up to maybe 93, 94%. That'd be awfully nice. And then if we got a couple more and a couple more, God, as long as I'm being greedy, heck, let's shoot for 120%, shall we?
Yeah. So any idea how this compares with any other El Nino winters?
It's an interesting kind of a thing. El Nino typically favors the south and gets drier as you go to the north. And there have been some El Nino years where the north just got absolutely hammered. And typically that comes a little bit later on in the season. 1983 comes to mind in the fact that April 1 of 1983, the state was pretty much average, but then it turned cold, stormy, and we kept getting snow and snow and snow clear to the end of May. And that's a possibility as well, a remote possibility, but it certainly can happen.
All right. So I called you a snow surveyor. What is it that you actually do?
Well, my job is to monitor the snowpack and other hydroclimatic variables such as soil moisture and temperature and precipitation. And from that information, we use hydrologic models to predict exactly how much water we're going to get in any given system. Knowing how much water you have allows management and planning. Obviously, if you don't have a lot of water, you're going to have to make restrictions. And if you have lots of water, you may be trying to find places to put it.
So when you go out to do your research then, I mean, you're looking at not only how much snow is on the ground, but how wet the snow is?
Exactly. What we really key in on is how much water is contained inside the snowpack. If you were to take that snowpack, say it's 10 feet deep, and melt that thing instantaneously, it would normally produce somewhere around 3.5 feet of water. That's the critical part of the thing, not how deep the snow is, it's how much water it has in it. And that is what allows us to predict how much runoff is going to occur on any given basin.
All right. So here in Summit Wasatch County, we're mostly concerned with the Weber and Provo River drainages. How are they looking? You had said, I think, just below normal?
They're running in that right at 90% of average, maybe a little bit higher. Soil moisture on both of those basins is below normal. And there's a few problems we have on the Weber Basin, Echo and Willard Bay. Both those reservoirs could stand to have a whole lot more water in them, and they don't. But overall, much better, much improved conditions compared to last year and much improved compared to the last 4 years.
Yeah. So why is with all of the rain and snow that we've seen, why is the soil moisture still dry, just because it was so dry before this?
That is exactly correct. We had an exceptionally dry fall. When you have a dry fall, a lot of those trees, conifers in particular, are still photosynthesizing, pulling moisture out of the soil and utilizing that. It dries everything back out. And then when you do get a snowpack, it comes in the form of snow, so it's not melting and replenishing that soil moisture.
All right. And then as you mentioned, down south, they've actually had a really good year. But in terms of like places like Lake Powell, people like to recreate. Is that going to fill up anytime soon?
Not anytime this year, next year, probably the next 5 or 10. When you take a look at Lake Powell, Lake Powell has got so much storage capacity, 25 million acre feet, and they're just over 10 million right now, so less than 50% of capacity. We're forecasting just under an average runoff year there. So when you combine the fact that you're going to get somewhere between 5 and 7 million acre feet in, and the amount of water that they're going to release to Lake Mead and the lower basin states, it'll be a wash pretty much this year.
Yeah. So
it'll come up, and then it'll go right back down.
So it sounds like we need to play some catch-up here.
Yes, indeed. On Lake Powell, multiple years of catch-up kind of a situation there.
Okay. Still better than what we've seen, so I guess that's the good news.
Oh, absolutely. I'm happy.
Good.
Absolutely happy. Just got a big smile on my face.
All right. Any other thoughts?
No, I think that pretty well covered the whole thing.
Okay. Randy, thanks.
You betcha. Take care.
It's Randy Jewlander again, a snow survey supervisor with the Natural Resources Conservation Service for Utah. It's 8:46 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, a new partnership between Rosinol and Switchback Sports has been reached, which will help more than 100 of the Youth Sports Alliance get out and play scholarship students. In the studio with details, I have Heather Sims. She's the Get Out and Play director, along with Patrick Fannin, owner of Switchback Sports. And then Belinda Cruz is joining us. She's a fifth grader and one of the beneficiaries of the program. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Patrick, how did it all work? YSA approached you. You approached Rosinol?
Being a small town, I knew some of the board members on the YSA program, and they came to me and asked if they could have a central location where all the scholarship kids could come and get outfitted and get set up, rather than kind of being distributed all over town. And I was more than willing to try and help out.
So you're kind of the storage unit for this.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So Switchback is located where?
We are right on Bonanza, next to where YSA is in the medical clinic, kind of across from El Chabasco, if you know where that is.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the deal here then, Heather?
So thankfully, well, Rosignol came forward and donated over 100 sets of skis and snowboards. And, you know, Patrick and his team spent hours and hours putting these skis and snowboards together, mountain testing them. And then we had 3 nights where people like Belinda came in and they got fitted for their skis and snowboards. We had 127 scholarship recipients this year. And so, you know, we could not have done this without the help of Patrick and his team.
Wow. So these were all new? This is all new equipment?
Yeah. So Ron and his team over at Rosinol, they're great. And Ron's part of the YSA program. And so he was more than generous in kind of helping donate the gear. And then we went, picked it up, and then we put it all together, sized all the kids, fit all the kids, prepped it all. It was a great exercise.
Yeah. A lot of work, though.
Now, do the participants have to pay anything for the equipment?
No, they don't have to pay any. They pay a commitment fee for the whole program. It's $50. And that includes the rentals, includes the instruction, and it includes the to and from the different resorts in town. And it also includes the lift pass. You know, we rely on donations and grants to get those 127 kids who would never have this chance to get to the mountain. So, This is Belinda's actually third year of doing it, and without programs like the Get Out and Play program, she wouldn't have a chance to get on the mountain. We all know how expensive the lift pass can be, and instruction and rentals. So it's you know, without people like Patrick, Ron, and other stores in town, and the resorts. I mean, they have been generous enough to offer us great discounts for our scholarship kits.
Yeah. So, Belinda, are you a skier or a snowboarder?
I'm a skier.
Okay. And do you get to take the equipment home with you then?
Yeah, but then I have to return it when it's all over.
Okay. So what do you like best about the Get Out and Play program?
Well, I mostly like everything because the teachers actually, like, teach you very good. And it's just fun going down the mountain really fast sometimes.
Yeah. Now, have you done just skiing? Because there's lots of other programs to participate in. There's, like, the cross-country skiing.
No, Nordic skiing. I've just done skiing.
Just skiing.
Skiing, yeah.
Now, is this as a fifth grader? Is that her final year to participate?
It is. It is at the moment. But the Epic Promise have given us a grant to work on a middle school program. And so that is something that I'm working on right now and will hopefully start in the 2016-2017 school year. We're not sure how the program is going to work right now because the middle school finishes later. But at the moment, until we got that grant, that was their only chance.
Right. So you mentioned skis and snowboards and so poles and boots as well?
Yep. They get and helmets.
Yeah.
So they get a full outfit.
Right. Okay. You're just doing this out of the goodness of your heart? I mean, you got the room for it?
Yes. I mean, we live here in town. We have two children. Our daughter's in fifth grade. Our son is in third grade. They participate in a lot of the YSA programs. And it's one of these rare opportunities where you know it's the right thing to do, and we were more than willing to help.
All right. So how long does the equipment last before you need to replace it?
It'll last 2, 3, 4 seasons. I mean, the kids take great care of it. And again, Rosignol has been great about if something kind of goes wrong, it's pretty easy to replace any, pieces that might have broken or whatnot, or kids get, lose a pole or something like that. But overall, they'll last 3 to 4 years.
All right. So when Belinda's done with it, she'll bring it back to switch back. You what, then just tune it and get it ready for next season?
Exactly.
Huh?
Yeah. Exactly.
They have it for 5 weeks. So so hopefully, we can continue to use these year after year and be able to offer scholarships year after year.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, really, without the help of Patrick and some of the other stores that, because we had quite a few extra kits this year, we had to, ask some of the other stores, but the majority was done through Patrick and his team. And I really am so grateful, not only to him, but the whole community who, we have a clothing night to help with the scholarship kits. The people donated clothing so that we literally can outfit them from toe to head with goggles and helmets and clothing. And so and it's just before winter, so they can use that clothing all winter long.
Yeah, so you feel pretty lucky, huh, Belinda?
Mm-hmm.
New skis, clothes, ski pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, living the life. Okay, anything else you guys want to mention?
Yeah, well, I would just like to mention, that without the help of the local community and their donations and grants, we couldn't do this program. And if people would like to donate, if they could go to ysaparkcity.org, there's a button right there. We're close to the endowment fund, Stein Erickson's endowment fund. We're about $185,000 away. And once we reach that, we'll be able to offer a lot more scholarships.
Great. So. Okay. Hey, Heather, Patrick, and Belinda, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:53.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jans Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory the Ranch Club and Promontory Foundation, and Carl Malone Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.